is March 12th, 2024. Time is 5:30. Could we have roll call, please, Jamie?
Yes, Mr. Hack.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Van Wachanova.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. Could we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That brings us to discussionary items, and I will turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right, well, thank you very much, President Zimmerman. So in your materials tonight, you're going to see the results of our RFP for school security. And that is the very first page in your handouts underneath work session. And it looks kind of like this, right here. Okay. So I just wanted to take a moment and let you know that we did go through the process of the RFP. And you can see in here that we had four companies come in and go put in all their materials, and that Robert Security and Securitas Security Services, both of those companies had all of the documents, but when we really get down to it, you can see that all of the other companies, their starting number was where Robert Security ended their number after 5 years. And so wanted to just share that part right there. Brian, correct?
Yes.
Yep. So we have Brian with Robert Security here tonight to answer any questions you may have, because we will be recommending Robert Security to you in the April board meeting to continue to provide security services. It will be a 5-year contract. Look at these numbers right here. And so I'd like to have you offer any questions to Brian and or myself at this time.
What was in the RFP? I never saw the RFP.
So the RFP is the same one that the district's used in the past. It's per hour rate, so that's all it is. And then it goes into depth about as far as being able to supply services at Monroe High School, Monroe Middle School, and then at evening events, along with the other times that we have security is also when we have Saturday events. For example, we're running our kids program like at Arborwood or at the middle school where we have soccer going on or basketball. And then currently they help us supply services at Arborwood. So that's the scope. There's the scope of it doesn't, we can go, there's no mandated number of people we need. And so that's where, as a district, we can change, okay, that for example, we only need one person at Arborwood, or we only need X hours coverage, or whatever it be at the building level.
So just, it's $21 an hour.
$21 an hour.
As much as we want.
Yeah. Yep. So for example, we have, I think it's three out at the high school. They begin there 6:30 in the morning, I think. No, 6 o'clock.
It varies. Yeah. I'm sorry.
What time at the high school?
5:30.
5:30, go through, open up everything. And then we'll have, I believe, one person that stays till what time at night?
11:30.
11:30.
3 to 11:30 p.m.
Yep. And that's because we have Monroe High School, kids come and going at all hours. So that building keeps a lot of coverage there. The middle school, that's just a normal day shift. And then same thing at Arborwood. Like I said, too, we'll bring in security when we have for our home events when it comes to football, basketball, sports of that sort. And the only time that we also use our security and is when we're having our events at the different buildings in regard when it comes to, like I said, those Saturday events from our community ed program.
What is our current rate? Do we do it per hour or how do we?
Yeah, so current rate is, Cass, you have that number?
$20 per hour.
That would be beginning July 1.
How much is our total compensation paid on the contract currently?
We're billed $20 per hour based on actual time worked.
How much is our current compensation that we paid last year?
Oh, so a total amount that we paid Robert Security last year for security services?
I don't have that in front of me.
That's something we can put in your board briefs.
I will say it's great to have a local company bid and come in.
If I can speak for a sec.
Yep, you just step to the mic that way.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
Hi, I'm Brian Francisco. Corky Kirsten, who most of you know, most likely know, he's a figure around town and a character in himself, but he's out of town. He asked me to stop by. Jerry Lemansky has been at the in the position at the schools for 12 years, roughly 12 years, on and off. And so he knows the ins and outs. That's why he was answering some of the questions. Robert Security, I know Corky expressed to me that he's happy to have his contract. He enjoys it. He's a big part in the school systems and, you know, as a liaison through when he was a sheriff deputy, things like that. And this contract's important to him. I think security at the school is important to him. It's something that hits home for him. So I know that in when you talk to him, you can hear in his voice that this is important and doing a good job here is important to him. So I just wanted to express that on his behalf. But if anybody's got any questions, more than happy to answer. If I can, and if not, I believe Jerry would be able to. So
yeah. Do we
also have security at Benmore for the bus garage?
No, only currently at the high school. At Arborwood, north and south, and then at the middle school. Thanks.
Wonderful. So we'll get that information to you right there. Again, like Larry had shared, it is wonderful to have a local company do that. And so you'll see a contract be in your hands. Ahead of that meeting, so to look at it. It'll be the same contract we've used in the past, just with the numbers changed.
You also have a copy of the RFP that was sent out and how it was advertised.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that. Was it in the newspaper?
It was in the newspaper. Yep. So it was in the newspaper. It was then also, I know, Jamie, we took control of that one this year.
Correct.
So share with everyone how we made contact with these different companies.
So the first way was through the newspaper. The second, we emailed anybody we had email addresses for to make things across the board. Even if they had an email, we also mailed it out via U.S. mail to, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 companies.
Yep.
Could we be furnished with that as well?
What was that?
Could we be furnished that as well?
Yeah, we furnished. We need it, yeah.
Yep. As well as the RFP, correct?
Yep. So, all right. Wonderful. So if anything else comes up, please be sure to email me on that. So thank you, fellows, for coming in tonight. So the next on the agenda was policy 0144.1, and this is board member compensation. From prior conversations, we talked about the whole thing of we have board members that would love and wish to have take zero compensation. And when we use the word zero, it means that there is no record at Monroe Public Schools that they received any monies. You saw documents come out before where due to federal law, it was pushing for that, where they had to show compensation. What we've asked from Jeremy was, is can we take and put into board policy, though, the ability to be very clear that a person is going to take and take zero and that they would not be issued a W-2. So it doesn't reflect at all that there was any compensation, no donation, nothing. And so before you, in there, you'll see it in yellow, and it said, board members, instead of the word shall, may elect to receive not more than $40 per meeting for up to a total not to be more than 52 meetings, including committee meetings as a compensation of services. So the new language would be, board members shall notify the superintendent in writing whether or not they will elect to receive compensation? And if so, for how many meetings they elect to receive compensation within 30 days of taking oath of office upon election or within 30 days of annual organizational meeting, which each year of service thereafter. Board members providing timely notice of election to receive no compensation shall be entitled to no compensation and shall not be issued a W-2 unless state or federal legal authority directs otherwise. So what that last part is, if we were pressured by the federal government or the state to no matter what, then we would. But at this point in time, the board policy would be used as a defense for any of our board members wishing to not take any compensation, and we can show that. And so, what would happen then is, like in this situation, right with where we're at right now, we would accept that letter from one of our board members here, and they would receive no compensation because we've not issued any this year. So we can still do that.
We've already issued our letters.
Right.
I know.
But the board policy, so we're trying to time it up, okay?
So what do you mean?
So the board policy, we would want to coincide this when the board policy took effect, but you would not receive compensation, okay, this year.
No, I'm just asking. Yeah. Are you wanting me to put another in writing?
We want to make sure we hit these dates. So
yeah.
The board meeting, so what would happen is if the board takes action on this,
yeah.
It'll be at the two meetings in April, okay, so after that second meeting, whomever in this room says, I want zero, put it in writing, give it to me, we're done. And then there's no, because
that
way, from that point forward, for the rest of this year. Because then at that point in time, you will have not, the board policy is in play, so then your letter, so if the federal government or the state government came in and said, we want to challenge this, we could show your letter dated at the same time with this, when that policy went into effect.
What about January to now?
January now, we could make the argument that because this policy went into play. Not for you guys. If we want to, well, we're trying to.
Sorry, can I? Because they did receive pay at the first payroll in January. So they would potentially still receive a W-2 for that one
the year prior
part.
Well, did we receive pay?
There was a.
I don't really want to go through all those details. I don't think that's going to benefit all of us unless you want to.
No, I'm just throwing that out there that there was board pay that was already paid in January. So there would have been one.
Yeah.
So it was processed in the same manner as it was last year, reflective of the notice that you gave us that you did not wish to receive compensation. We process it in the same manner as last year because nothing has changed yet in the board policy.
So in this, does this mean it's going to follow the same, that it has to be donated?
It depends on what action the board takes on the changing of the policy.
So as it currently states, if you want no compensation, under this policy, as it is written, is that considered the same, that I would then, my pay would then be donated to the school?
My understanding with the update from Jeremy is that what you're going to indicate is that you are not entitled to any compensation, so then we don't owe you any compensation and there would be nothing to donate.
Correct.
So that was his legal way of getting around the, not getting around, but
following
the legal way to make it clear that you weren't being remunerated for any services, because that was where the current board policy indicates we're paying you for services as a board member attending meetings, and that relationship requires us to pay it through the payroll system and then record the donation on the other side when you wish to not receive compensation, which is part of what Jeremy is firming up in the proposed changes.
So when I responded back, I asked the question about the unless state or federal legal authority directs otherwise. I think the ambiguity of language, so my question to you was, does this policy, this unless state or something, going to come up and tell me next month, oh, by the way, we told you that, but state says and the federal says no. So my question was, does this policy meet exactly what is in the law right now?
So in the law right now, it's way everything, when we were, documents we pushed out, it was very clear that if you're a board member and there's compensation attached, then you would receive, even if you say no, doesn't matter. You're still receiving because it's required there. And that was in all those documents.
There's an IRS opinion on that one. You might want to, I think it's 2005.
But that's.
I might want to check on that.
But that's what we pushed out.
If you don't receive that, no, that's not what you put out. I'm sorry. It's an IRS. I think the attorney, the attorneys for the IRS put out an opinion. And it says if you don't receive compensation, there's no W-2. I think I can probably pull that up for you if you need that.
I think that last year, I don't want to fall in the same situation as that happened last year, because last year we made the agreement as a board at the beginning of last year that even though the policy could remain the same at the beginning of the organizational meeting, we could opt. And that's why the motion included the language that if we didn't want to, we didn't have to. So what I'm understanding is that wasn't sufficient. Even though we did that, we said that, it wasn't sufficient.
I don't think
so. So I want to make sure we're not falling, because in the same situation where we say, okay, well, we said that, but. And that was my only thing with this language, is the clarification.
I don't think that's what the general counsel for IRS said. It basically says if you get the money, you report on W-2. If you don't get the money, it's not reported on W-2. Marlis put in simple terms. Because, and if you stop and think about it, it makes sense. I mean, W-2 says how much money did you receive? If you receive nothing, there's nothing to report. So I don't see the issue. I don't even see why we have to change it, to be honest with you.
If you see, I don't want it, and you don't receive it.
I've said it 1,000 times.
Well, yes.
Sorry,
951, I was counting.
Thank you, Larry.
But we did put communications out that came in that showed that after 2005 or whenever it was, that it came out that if a board member, and it's talk about any at this level and any level of a board member, if it's in the policy, you can receive compensation, even that, no matter what, that's what's going to happen. So that's why we just wanted to say in here, Darla, to your point, was that the reason why it states in there, unless state or federal authority dictates otherwise, we're trying to put in a mechanism so that we can show in our board policy that we have board members that said we did not want it, that we also have a letter saying we did not want it, so that if they come and push on it, which I would be shocked, but if they came and pushed on it, we could show that we have the stuff. Because everything that we pushed, gave out to you guys, and I'm trying to find it quickly in here.
I still don't understand why we need the unless state or federal legislation, because here's my understanding of policy. You write a policy based on the current legislation. That policy is written based on the legislation as of the date of the policy being adopted. Then if the language of the law or legislation changes, you must adopt your policy to those changes, which would give you a new date on your policy. So we don't have other policies that state, and you can correct me if there's a multitude and I'm not aware of them, that say unless state directs otherwise. So if that's the case and we required in this one, why don't we require that in all policies?
Because this is the whole thing, this is it's law will supersede policy.
Sure.
And so that's what we're just trying to protect. Again, at the end of the day, I love the idea you don't want you to take the money, okay? And so
it's just so difficult.
And I don't want it to be difficult either.
So the other part of it comes into the 52 meetings.
I think that should be struck out too, because then that creates a whole other thing that she gets to keep track of.
But the law says, correct me if I'm wrong, the way that Jeremy did the law said it was 52 weeks. Remember in the paperwork that you guys submitted, you said the law states this, and when you sent it to me, you said the law said you can be paid up to 52 weeks. I think the law says up to $30, unless the board does whatever with 52 weeks.
I know what you're talking about, but you're talking about, it's talking about the ISD. There's a statute that
says
intermediate school districts shall receive no more than $30 per meeting, or no more than 52 weeks. Unless you do certain things like change it.
So that's not us.
That's not us.
Okay, so we can get as much as we
Yeah, for example, Ann Arbor, I know, gets like, I think it's like $1,300 a month or something like that. And
what?
Yeah.
Oh, California, you're looking at almost $100,000 compensation.
Don't you remember?
But that's a full.
Don't you remember Detroit when they used to have their own limousines?
Yeah. And they had that, yeah, and they chauffeured.
I was out of the loop back then, sorry.
Yeah.
But if I understand it, it says you're only paid up to 52 meetings per year.
Right.
And I know I got paid more than 52 meetings last year.
Right, that's why I think that needs to be pulled out of there. If we're gonna do this policy.
A policy states that, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And.
So we violated policy.
Yeah, so sometimes you go back to what was a past practice. And so in the past, that's what it was in the past too. I mean, the 52 meetings, I don't know that, unless, again, that was not caught before, but the 52 meetings was not something that was adhered to. It was whatever number of meetings that the district had, and that's what they paid out. So that's why, again, like Larry's saying, is like, well, then pull that number off there so we don't have to even think about the number of meetings. It's just $40 when we come to, when there's a meeting, we're done.
If we want that. Maybe
if you don't, well, that's could be all. That's where you get to, as a board, have that conversation. I'm out of that one.
I'm just throwing that out there, that there is multiple options to that.
There is, but I think it just creates a hassle that another thing on Jamie that she just doesn't need. Because then you got to do a spreadsheet, each person, how many meetings have they had.
How did you do it all these years before?
Nobody ever worried about it, obviously.
You just got paid every meeting.
You just got paid every meeting.
That's still what's happening. Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying let's pull it out of the policy.
Just so we don't.
So, we're rewriting policy so we don't violate our own policy. Let's do it right.
Jeremy, just because it was in the last one, when he reread this.
I think it's
a
CYA moment.
The 52?
Could be.
Because we're violating our own policy.
The 52?
No. You can't do a CYA on that. That would mean you better put it in every policy.
But that's why it's.
I think it's because.
Oh, that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure.
I think it's because NEOLA is often the one that kind of provides us the content of a lot of our policies. We are specifically adding this component that's highlighted in yellow, and I feel like the reason why Jeremy may have added that last phrase to that paragraph highlighted in yellow is because NEOLA didn't author this, therefore he wants to add, like, no. NEOLA did the things that are not highlighted in yellow. We're adding the things that are in yellow, and I think it's because we are manipulating what NEOLA has offered, and because if we are manipulating things beyond what NEOLA might be comfortable with, Jeremy may, I'm making an assumption, and you know what happens when you assume, I'm making an assumption here that maybe Jeremy put that additional last phrase in to provide some additional, like, supports and acknowledge that the state or the federal government might, you know, need to swoop in here.
I'm going to ask that Jeremy respond to that
yep.
and let us know.
He will. And in regards to the 52 meeting, because I think it's what your question was.
Yes.
That was preemie. I don't know why that. When the board crafted it and put a number in there?
It came from, the ISD language.
Okay.
It says the same thing.
So they just
adopted
it. But it was a NEOLA policy. It was a NEOLA policy because it says NEOLA on it.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah.
Because it may have been optional language when NEOLA crafted it. Says, do you want to put a number in there or not? And so when the board did.
Well, we're
assuming a lot. Well, no. Last time, NEOLA, they'll have in there the options. And you can leave it with. No number of meetings, to putting a number in there, to only regular board meetings, to whatever you wanted it to be. And that's why they even put the words in there, including committee meetings. So that was added.
I think Bologna has that language.
So, Darla, yes, I will get you that answer from Jeremy on that one. And so that'll be in your board briefs this week, too.
Just a word of curiosity. It says that board members shall notify the superintendent right whether or not they elect to receive compensation within 30 days. What if we forget? Is there a default?
vault mechanism?
So what we're going to actually do is we're going to create a form, and it's going to be really simple that each of you will receive it. Yes, I want compensation. No, I do not want compensation. Or yes, I want compensation for only 20 meetings or whatever. You can put a number in there because that's what you have is those are your three choices. All compensation, select number of meetings, none.
I don't want to create more work for Jamie.
No, nope. Because then that way we have that way you don't, it would just be given to you guys each year when the organizational meeting is. Well, after this comes in, the organizational meeting, you're done and don't even need to, it's done and over. So that way you've already made your election.
Phew.
Done.
That would be nice when that's done.
Yes, I totally agree there. So I will, and Jamie, you got the notes, so have me contact Jeremy in the morning. Perfect. And so see that right there in regards to both the 52 meetings. I'll get an answer to you and also the unless.
When is all this ever come into play? And those that have been on the board for a while may be able to explain that, this whole going to conferences thing.
I went to the MASB Annual Leadership Conference, and I went to a conference, the fall conference up in
there. We used to go to a lot more conferences than we do now. We used to go to Nashville, for example, most of them. Just to at least try to
Let's
go
just
to
go to one in Vegas.
Well,
I miss New Orleans.
Yeah. New Orleans? Well, I'll go to New Orleans. Oh, okay.
There was board members across the state that went to each year go to Washington in January. And there's.
The ISD went there this past.
They did. Because they've got meetings set up with legislative people there.
Yeah,
so. So that's why it's there. Just so if that, there's parameters already in place. So if board members go to a conference, you can see what will be done.
So you just put a request in if there's a conference that comes up that you'd like to go to?
Yeah, there's a conference request form. And those parameters are the same that are used for staff members that attend conferences as well.
Wonderful. That pushes you to the early learning plan.
Yes. So tonight we're going to take, and Terry's going to share with you, I'll piggyback a little bit, our early learning plan. And a lot of this has to do with where we know the state's coming with four-year-olds and GSRP, and also thinking about continuum of services and what we're in. It kind of leads into the next item. But and we look at the services that are provided. So we want to show you really where we're headed right here, because it's we got to continue to just lift up in row. So Terry, you want to take that?
Absolutely.
Question first.
Yes.
Is 4-year-olds going to be a requirement for school?
Currently, it is not a requirement.
Is that what is being proposed?
No.
Coming
no.
Up?
And the parents will still have a choice. I mean, the difference will be is when the state says okay. All four-year-olds can go to a preschool for free. The parent will still have a choice if they'll send or not. In fact, right now, the state's projecting right now only 75% of four-year-olds will take part in it. Okay. They don't think it's going
to
be a full 75%.
Yeah, no, I get a fun topic to talk about tonight. So as Andy said, there is a lot of support from both the federal government and the state government to expand preschool programming, not require it, but to expand it so that families will have more options to be able to have preschool opportunities for their children if they would like to do so. So I thought I would just start with reviewing the current programming that we have within Monroe Public Schools so you can kind of see where that is, and then share with you what we're researching and ideas that we're thinking about as we move forward. So in board briefs, I have to keep this pushed down? I do. In board briefs.
Can you hold that for her?
It's 2024. I wouldn't want to disrespect her.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know how she's going to hold that down.
There we go.
That is so much easier.
Is this on, Jean?
It is.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. This is so much better. So in board briefs a few weeks ago, I had given you the description of the programs that we have in the district
and the number of each program that we have in each building. So I'll just review that really quickly if that's okay with everyone. So one of the programs that we have is called GSRP, and that's the Great Start Readiness Program. This is funded through the state, and it's available to students who are 4 years old. It's free to families. It's a general education program for children in Michigan who are four by December 1st. And in order for students to qualify for this, there is an income requirement form that they have to fill out. And currently, we have two GSRP rooms at Custer, one at Riverside, two at Arborwood, and one at Raisinville. The next program we have is Head Start. This is federally funded, and this is the only program that we have in the district that is funded by the federal government. And that's a program for 3 and 4 year olds who, again, meet federal poverty guidelines. A child from a family that is receiving public assistance or supplemental Social Security income, a child in foster care, or a child who is experiencing homelessness is eligible for Head Start. This also is a general education preschool program, and we have 5 Head Start classrooms at Arborwood, 1 at Riverside, and 2 at Orchard.
Now those are ISD programs, right?
They are. Yep, you're absolutely right, Larry. The Early Childhood Special Education Programs, the acronym for that is ECSE, and this is a state-funded preschool program for 2.5 to 5 year olds who require a special education classroom to meet their needs. And so all students who are in these rooms do have an IEP, and there are currently 2 ECSE classrooms at Arborwood and 2 at Custer. The last one is Rainbow Preschool, and that's a tuition-based program. So our families do pay to send their children there. It's for 3 and 4 year olds, and it's open to any Monroe Public School family. And we only have 1 Rainbow Preschool program, and that's at Riverside. And as Larry had pointed out, GSRP Head Start and ECSE preschool programs are all run by the ISD, and Rainbow is a Monroe Public Schools program.
The cost of that rainbow?
I do not. Cindy, do you happen to know? Cindy works with Paula at Riverside.
Just a ballpark. Is it affordable? Very affordable.
If I may.
Yeah, oh, Cassie. Cassie's the answer of all questions.
It depends. There's a 2-day-a-week program or a 3-day-a-week program. Yes. I believe the 2-day-a-week program is $100 per month. The 3-day-a-week is $150, I believe.
Also, can you give the number of students in each of these classrooms that you're, because I know there's some maximums in these programs too.
That I don't have with me, Andy.
So 16 to 18 students.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Then you can't, it's all based on the number of, in these classrooms like GSRP, I think Head Start's the same too, but you can't, it's, I think it's a 3 adults in there, if you're going to be at 18, 2 if you're at 16. I know the state's looking at if your room size is large enough, this you can go to 20 this next year. But that's, they limit the number of students that can be in these classrooms.
Yeah.
Doesn't the GSRP have an age related on it? Is that the one that has the age requirement for meeting 4-year-old? You have to meet the 4-year-old by a certain deadline?
Yes.
Is that just the early 5 program?
Yes, you have to be 4 by December 1st.
No, it says it in there, but then isn't Monroe's 5, is there a gap between the two? Someone had told me one time that there's a gap between the two where a student could literally fall in between the programming because of the date.
In regards to Young 5 programming?
Yeah, the combination into the two.
There, it could be a possibility depending where the student's birth date falls. We do work with families to make the best determination for their children, so we have within the Young 5 program, students would have their birthday, it's that December 1st mark again, but that's when they would be turning 5. So.
Yeah, and then if they wouldn't meet the requirements of the GSRP, correct. They would be left with no opportunity except the Rainbow Preschool through the schools.
Someone
was explaining this scenario to me one time, and I just, we can move on, but I just happened to think about there was, they made
So there really isn't for our system, because with December 1 right there for four-year-old, so you got to turn four, honor before December 1. For young fives for us, honor before December 1. Now, if a parent pushes that, I don't want my child in a young fives classroom, well, then we go down, because then we have kindergarten that is October 1, I believe.
September 1.
So that's where you have that gap. So they, a parent may say, no, I want my child here. And that's where there you could see a gap. So they still have an opportunity, though, to be in our Young Fives program. If we didn't offer Young Fives, now it's a whole different ballgame. We do offer.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Darla. Thanks for asking that. So I think as a district, we can be really proud of all of the preschool programs that we do have. But obviously, the more students we can get into preschool, the better. And so through the work right now of the state of Michigan, they are looking at how we can utilize and expand on some of our funding revenues, like our Title I funds and Title III funds, to be able to help pay for preschool, and encouraging people to work with their ISDs to continue to offer GSRP programming. So we really are really excited about this option and this opportunity, because we know one of the things that we talk about in education is we talk about the achievement gap. And so that achievement gap is when a student should be achieving here, but they're not, they're achieving down here, and so there's a gap. One of the things that attending preschool or not attending preschool also does is it can provide an opportunity gap for students. So within preschool programming, students have access to a lot of books, to field trips, to exposure to different math concepts and all different types of things, so that that opportunity gap isn't there for them. So there's just a lot of research that demonstrates how effective preschool programming is for children, and we're excited to share some thinking that we have. So I do have, and I'm so glad I have this microphone here, we have a couple maps to share with you. So instead of just talking about what it would look like, we thought if we had a picture, it would help. And I don't know if everybody can see this or not.
Was that intentional?
Can you move over there?
There's always that.
So to start with, we're thinking about Riverside. And Riverside formerly was the Early Learning Center. And so where our thinking is leading us is to return Riverside to an Early Learning Center. So currently, Riverside houses Kids Club. It houses a Rainbow 3 and 4 program, Head Start, and a GSRP room. So the yellows are the preschool. The blues, then, are the virtual programs. So most of them are high school classrooms, and there's one elementary virtual classroom. So as you can see, the majority of the space at Riverside is dedicated right now to virtual. And what we're researching is finding a different location for the virtual program so that we can then open the rooms up. Let's see how good I am, how graceful I can be with. I even practiced this. Ta-da. With taking the virtual out of Riverside, it just opens up a lot of opportunities for more preschools. We have talked with the ISD about what their thinking is around that, and they love the idea of adding these five additional preschool rooms. They're really thinking a lot about moving their Head Start programming over to Riverside, because then it allows them to coordinate resources more efficiently rather than having them in two different buildings. The Head Start coordinators and the staffing can all kind of be housed in one place. So this is what it would look like. We would still keep Kids Club, still keep the preschools that we have, add five more preschools in there, and then also with moving the virtual out, it frees up two more rooms for this newer idea that we'd like to research more, and that would be infant through toddler programming. So programming and having opportunities for infants through toddlers, there's lots of school districts around us that currently do that. We have some at Milan. Ida is looking at it. The MCES parochial schools do this. And what that would be, you know, just starting really small. And this would account for up to, depending on the ratio of infants to toddlers, it could include 8 to 12 children. So it would just be a real small number to start with. But we like to just see what that could look like for the district and how we could even bring families to us sooner. One of the things that we do notice when children come to kindergarten is that sometimes they have developmental delays, they have behavioral concerns, they have academic learning disabilities, and we feel like the sooner that we can get them with us and help to identify those needs and provide services for them, they will have a more successful academic career when they start kindergarten. So that's our goal.
So what are you programming?
So the programming would be for what that looks like. So you have to think about how much square footage you have, and then based on the square footage that's available in the room, that determines how many children you can have in there. And then, you know, you have to figure out how many cribs you would have and height chairs and all of those things, and then what happens during that day when they're there.
Yeah, because if you have children in there that do not have those conditions for which you're indicating, and it's open to all, or is it only going to be open to some, and if it, other ones don't have that, what are you programming? I mean, your infants and toddlers. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, what are you programming? Are you programming reading and writing? Are you programming science?
So at those, yeah, no. So there's actually, Darla, there's like a big, huge, thick manual that has exactly what should be happening with those students during the day. So it lists like toys that are tactily appropriate. So kids are, you know, feeling different types of surfaces, kinetic movement types of things to do with children. So, you know, in addition to like the basic things of taking a nap and the feeding and all of that, it would be like, what does play look like? What does it look like to interact with them? Talking with them, reading them stories, you know, just the things that you would do as you were taking care of your own children and your grandchildren.
So no calculus or anything like that?
No.
Money for the smart, real smart.
Okay.
We could hire you, Darla.
Now, the infants, I mean, you're talking about newborns? Or what?
It starts at 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't get much newer than that.
They do not get much newer than that. You are correct.
Really, it's school-sponsored child care.
Correct. Right. Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jefferson has something like this, and this is where Porter did this in Jefferson. It's called Cub Care. It's in Sote Elementary School, and it was absolutely adorable because they take the little babies into the older kid rooms, and they take them down to the gym, and it's wonderful because not only do they get to be around other children, so mm-hmm. they get to start learning about, like, interacting with peers and sharing and all of that from such an early age, but then they're also with, like, educational experts in the room that can start noticing things, and if they're noticing that they are having difficulty with gross motor skills, that they can start working with those things early on.
There's models across the country and across the world that have this model as well.
Yeah.
Yes, you are absolutely correct. It is not anything new. There's lots of places that are doing it. Yes, we are just beginning. Say that again.
Where's the money coming from?
So there are grants out there to apply for. There's also a federal reimbursement part of it that maybe, I don't know, Cassie, if you know anything about that, but there is a way that you, I think through DHHS, the district can apply for reimbursement of
yep.
those services.
I can speak a little bit on it. And our current kids club facilities are licensed through the state and are eligible for DHHS funding. So if we have people at large that we're providing childcare to that are on a DHHS case, we submit their student, their child's information to the state as far as how many hours each week that they're in the facility, and based on whatever their case is, there's different levels of reimbursement that we receive from the state.
If I recall, though, that reimbursement is pretty nominal, isn't it? Because I think Cub Care is kind of expensive, if I remember right.
I believe there's a voucher system for those families, so it's on a scale based on who can pay and who cannot. So I feel like there's also scholarships available, but I could be wrong because Porter's 7, and that was long, long, long time ago for us.
The reimbursement rates have changed a lot in the last few years, and the state for a period of time, and I believe it may still be occurring that they're reimbursing us for like a full 40-hour week, even if they're not here the full time.
I think Cub Care is almost $10,000 a year. I think so.
That, again, 7 years ago, but we would not have been able
that's
to
a lot of money.
Afford that.
That's a lot.
I'm just going to make a note here that as the federal government, the state government has more and more grant money, there's only one place all that money comes. So someone is paying for all of that.
Someone is.
It is not free. It is a cost that comes from somewhere. And there's only one place the government gets our money, and that be taxes from people that pay them. So, you know, it's we always look at this and we go, wow, it's free money. It's not free money. And I just want us to be mindful of that.
I mean, they gave them some funds to go through September, but I don't see all the extra money coming through.
Guess they got a plan.
There we go.
Hey, Terry.
Yes.
So where would the virtual classrooms go if this plan were to go through?
So that's another part of the plan that we're researching. There's different options. Obviously, when you think about the secondary virtual, there's room at the high school, Orchard, middle school. When we think about the elementary, we think about, you know, perhaps Custer or Arborwood. The elementary virtual has decreased in numbers substantially. So I believe the last number we had was 19 students are in that program. So that program has decreased a lot since the days of COVID when we had hundreds that were in
we
there.
We really want our virtuals with the high school, especially since a lot of those are as a result of expulsion, mm-hmm. which we specifically say in UNI not to mm-hmm. in the high school. Mm-hmm. And I think we say that for there's a reason, because we don't yeah. want them to get back in the same environment that they were.
Yeah. Right.
Or a risk.
A risk, mm-hmm. yeah.
So we've also been thinking about what an expelled students program would look like. You may remember we had that back at Orchard a few years ago. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions that we're looking into, but we did want to inform you of where we're thinking of heading, and we'll continue to update you as we have information.
Yep.
So what's the timeline you're shooting for? 2024-25 school year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
That's this September.
Right. Yeah.
So this must already be in play. I mean, this must already be decided. I mean, if this is coming in December and it's April, it takes us 6 months to get some of this stuff done. I mean, really, it does. So I would imagine this just starting out at this point.
Yeah, so this would be, this here is a movement of preschools from other places, and then looking at where we can expand. This part here, before you can do anything at all, you have to be licensed. So the rooms that we would be using have to be licensed. None of that has started yet.
Yeah. But to anticipate having that ready to go by 2024, by September, the September plan. So where is this information? Is this something we can take a look at and see what's going on with this, like what the plan is?
That's why we're presenting it right now. There's not more stuff written down. That's why we're sharing. The other piece being is if the state comes out and the legislature passes and they say, okay, the funding is there for four-year-olds, some schools are going to be able to start it next fall, some won't. We've already petitioned for more slots.
So the, from the ISD, for us, we need about 200 more would be is approximately our number that would allow us to have the ability to have all of our four-year-olds have the access to the preschool. And so that would be, for example, 8 to 12 classrooms, more than what we currently would was shown here. And so we want to be prepared for it because that's one of the things, and we've talked with ISD about the teachers and what that could begin to look like, because if that comes through, that's a great situation for Monroe Public to be one step ahead because it's going to be there. And so when we look over here at Riverside, it's already designed as an early learning center. We look at water in classrooms, look at bathrooms, look at the size. Andrew, I was going to have you speak about why having at Riverside and having the early childhood special education, having two of those classrooms located there versus the way we're currently set up in our system.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're really spread
out. He's a special ed director.
Can you come up, Andy?
Yeah, so that way they can.
Times. So really, when we look, and I K-12 is yes, I remember you. Yes, K-12 was definitely like kind of like my knowledge and specialty for sure. But when we look at how our early childhood programs, our Head Start, our GSRP, you know how Terry described, they're really across the county in multiple locations. And I think when you consider number one, like the staffing needs that we have, and it's a challenge at the ISD, it's a challenge at the district to really staff our classrooms. So if we can have these places and really centralize our locations and centralize our support, we're able to really be more consistent with the support we're able to provide our classrooms instead of having subs on like a rotating basis, right? These are our kiddos, especially in our early childhood rooms that we've already identified at an early age. These are our most complex learners. They have the most needs and they're our most vulnerable learners. To have that support all within one location helps us have all those people together to lump that support together and do things like more consistently. And then really when it comes to like the toddlers, Terry, sorry to kind of tail off you, there is actually like early learning standards for infants and toddlers. And it's definitely like more basic than like the math and the addition things, but it's being able to make sounds and point and interact and be able to identify like a family member in a picture, you know, who is your mom? Can the child point to a picture of their parent, which I know sounds basic, but you know, they're 6 months. So it is basic skills. Cause like I have a 3-year-old and a 15-month-old that go to a Montessori daycare and we get like early learning standard reports, which I did find fascinating because I didn't know that those were a thing until I learned through my own kids.
Yep. But at one time you had the Be the Hero from age 0. Was that ever developed or what happened to that program?
Since this is my 6th year here, and that hasn't been a thing since I've been here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't recognize either.
Be the Hero from age 0.
Yeah.
I'm not as old as I look. Okay. All right, you know.
So do know, thank you, Andrew. So do know that when we think about the virtual side, that's one of those things that we will get figured out. We've already been thinking about, for example, all right, well, if it was at Monroe High School, how would that actually work for location? Already we have students that, we provide no seat time waiver, so that's a mute point, so they're not there. But then, okay, does it make more sense at Orchard? Where is that location? The ability to think in terms of that, the at some point in time, as you can already see hearing from the state, what's coming is preschool is coming. And so we're looking at our space. And that's the reason why Monroe, we actually have an opportunity this year to be able to launch preschools because we have space. You go to other schools right now, that's what they're going to have to figure out. So it may take them a whole year because they're going to have to make some big changes in what they do to create space because they don't, it's a commodity for them. I'll give you an example. Airport, they're building like crazy, and they're looking at going, what are we going to do having to even add 4-year-olds? So they would have that problem. So when we begin to look at it is that Riverside, and then there would be potentially another building that would be like the early learning, okay, and because if we're getting back to that space issue and where kids are located. So we're just trying to plan ahead right there. We've actually, like I said, petitioned with the ISD for more slots. And if we get more slots, great. Even if the state doesn't do it, you know, say for all 4-year-olds, we're just asking for more slots. So if we can get more, again, it gives an opportunity. Now, again, all parents don't have to take a, doesn't, some will take it and use it, some won't. And but they at least won't have the be told no because we didn't have a slot or an opportunity there. So more to come on this as we continue to just move forward and more information. We expect that from the state level, you know, more information on the preschool side, and so that way we're not, what we're trying to get into here in March is that we're trying to plan ahead so that if things happen, we can just then begin to fill the program and be able to launch it early. And the other reason for it is if we can go out and grab up teachers earlier and have them in our system a year ahead of the rest, well, we're keeping them. So there's another added advantage.
Is
the other thing to mention is that many of these families and parents that choose to place their child at a young age, they're going to stay there for the next 13 years. So if we can scoop them up at preschool age and have a great place for them, then we're going to keep that family.
And Carrie, I truly appreciate it because that was one of the things when we were talking with parents last year is preschool and or their daycare was the reason why they pick schools they pick. And so once they've locked down already, and I remember we just had a student that moved into another district, so that district, the parent requested a release so they could come back to us, and this parent said, we talked it all out, and she goes, my child's been with you since 3 years of age, and they're not leaving. I said, perfect. Put that on the paper when you turn it into your school, please. And so you're right. Once they're here with us, they're going to stay. Yes, ma'am.
Can't fix this button situation. Like, this is absolutely torture over here, just so you know.
We have to have our public hear it, and the public can't hear some people.
Well,
we should have a button that you press on, then it stays on, then you press off, and it stays off.
Yeah, you do that until
you
push it.
You can do whatever you want.
Oh.
I'm telling you, this is just torture over here. I'm sorry, that was a total side note. As I recall looking at the education system, with the introduction of kindergarten, I believe most kindergartens started out, you spent half your time in kindergarten and you had requirements to get into kindergarten. Then kindergarten went to full time and kindergarten went for the full length of the day and the requirements came a little more extensive. You had to require to do more things. Then when Young Fives came around, Young Fives essentially became the kindergarten. Kindergarten essentially became first grade. So with the introduction of another level, possibly you're looking at five levels, because if you're going from birth to age four, I mean, to age five or whatever, that's like another five levels. What is the anticipation of the requirement changes? Because that does make a big impact on what the expectations for are these kids. Because if we keep upping the bar and we keep upping the bar, I just don't know at what point that just keeps going up and we're like starting out 5-year-olds as sixth graders. I mean, you know.
I don't anticipate for there to be very academic requirements for students to enter preschool. Currently within the district, when students enroll with us for Young Kindergarten, we have a screener that we use with them just to see where they're at. So there's no requirements. We do to see if they can tell us their first name, their last name, book, can they the right way. And this is the retina screener. So this is just like part of what we do before a student enters kindergarten to see where they're at with different types of cutting. We give them a pair of scissors. Do they know any shapes? So it's just to see where kids are at, but we don't hold anyone or keep them out of kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. By the time my grandkids went here recently, you better know a lot more than the alphabet. You better be able to put so many sounds together. You better be able to do more so you can plug yourself right into the current curriculum as it's written.
Yeah, so I would agree with that, Darla, that over the years I have seen like the expectations grow in early grades. I don't anticipate anything changing in regards to that. I don't think that we will see anything coming about in preschool or in any type of, you know, toddler program where there's stringent types of academia. All of those programs are based on developmentally appropriate activities and experiences that are fully researched, you know, that are done with students. So I don't think there will be anything that we will see that will continue to, like, push things up to an unrealistic level.
Don't you remember my very first time ever showing up at a school board meeting, and that was the question that was asked of me, what brought me here?
I think I do.
Yeah, that's where that comes from. I still stand by that, yeah. Like, thought process.
Yep.
So more to come on preschools and preschool, and as we learn more, you will learn more. So the next item, and understand the teacher evaluation process, we're not going to get to that tonight. That will be brought forward to you. We were trying to, we just didn't get time to prep there. So we are only going to do the continuous services. So what we're going to share with you, I'm going to get the screen up here, is a presentation. And so Andrea and Emily are here along with us, and we're going to go over what this continuum looks like. And so that is in your handouts right there underneath in your work session materials. And it's it says Y5 kindergarten right here, okay? And so what this all becomes is, and my goodness, we practiced this thing 5 times already at buildings talking about this, so should have it down. We're looking at our special education and our general education environment and how it all works. And what we have currently in the design, that's not uncommon around the state of Michigan, is you have destinations. And you have these destinations, and the destination is a place you want to get to. And sometimes it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, Tom just recently had a destination he wanted to get to. And so he pulled it off getting on vacation and going. But when we create destinations, sometimes that could be also a bad thing. And in the world of special education and in our system, and when I say our system here, I'm going to speak specifically of Monroe County, we have 2 destinations. You go into special education services, and or then you could also go to what's called local base, okay? And sometimes this could be a very is a positive environment for students, but also it could be very much a place where people are trying to get you to it. And that can be a bad thing. And so we want to always think about what's called least restrictive environments. So, Andrew, if you want to grab a mic, and Emily, you can pop up there too, because I'm going to have you pop in here with it. So we're just going to kind of just run you through the basics right here. This document in a couple of days will be available to you as board members also. I can see if we can do that one there on the Prezi. I don't know if we can.
For some reason, I don't get all my emails. Daryl and I were talking about that last night. I get a lot of them, but I don't get all of them. I'm not sure why. So if we do get paper, count me in the paper today.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to, one of you two want to handle least restrictive environment and then the state?
Sure. Yeah. So we've really had a ton of conversations in work, and I think since Emily's kind of new position has been created, I think there's really been a lot of really good work between the IST and the local district. Some really good results. I think I used to be seen at a lot of discipline hearings, and we've had a lot fewer of those for students who are supported by an IEP, which I think is a credit to some of the work that we've done for some of our more complex learners. So we have probably had more conversations in the past, I would say, 2 years around certain grade levels within the district. You know, our high school, I was a high school teacher, we were always going to have high school problems because they're adult age kids, right? But our kindergarten classrooms have really been the focus of a lot of our attention, and how can we support our youngest learners to provide that level of early intervention? Because again, research was pretty consistent that once we get to that fifth and sixth grade level, remediation is a challenge. It's expensive, and it's a challenge, and the results aren't great. All right, and that's synthesized research across decades. So we've been thinking that, what can we do for our kindergarten and our earliest year learners to provide a greater level of support when it comes to, you know, general education and special education to get these kiddos when they are younger, so we're not trying to do work when we have our fifth and sixth graders reading at a kindergarten level, because at that point, the task is 10 times as great to get those kiddos to grade level. So some really good conversations. We've done a lot of focus groups with a bunch of stakeholders, actually. I mean, teachers from the ISD, teachers from the district, gen ed social workers, special ed social workers, principals, and Mr. Shaw has been involved the past couple of months as well, to really get some feedback from people who are doing the real work. I always tell, like, I don't know how you could ever teach kindergarten to start with, right? Those folks, their jobs is 10 times harder than my job ever will be. I'm behind a desk all day. Those folks are doing the work with, you know, 22 5-year-old kiddos that they're trying to learn how to read and act and do school, and credit to them, because to me that's an impossible task. And we've just seen such an increase in just the needs of our kiddos, and it's not even necessarily because it's correlated to a child's disability, but the needs that kiddos have. We have kids in our district that, you know, they're going to go home tonight, and if it was cold, the heat's not on in their house, right? They don't know where dinner's going to come from tonight. And you pair those challenges up, and then those kiddos come into school the next day, and we expect them to do X, Y, and Z, and their young, undeveloped brains, they're not ready for that, right? They're worried about, what's going to happen when I go home today? Like, do we have a place to live? We have seen such an increase in our homeless shelters within the county as well. So all of those needs that we've really seen kind of take off exponentially the past couple of years has resulted in some of our kindergarten classrooms being a real challenge, right? And that's not a disrespect to our teachers who are doing the work. It's because the needs of the kiddos that we are supporting continues to evolve. And then it would be, you know, malpractice if we don't try to evolve what we're doing to match the needs of some of our students. So kind of through this work, we were thinking through some different ideas of how can we support kiddos with our continuum, right? So our continuum of services, that when we look in the county, it's all the way from our least restrictive environment, which is just a traditional gen ed classroom, where you have some kiddos that just might have needs of speech and language, right? So they have an SLP that comes in, works with that kiddo for 2 or 3 times a month. And then you have all the way up to kiddos who might be truly like hospitalized. So we have some kiddos who are homebound or hospitalized because of really intense medical needs. And that's the most restrictive. And in between is a plethora of different things. And the beauty of it is this continuum provides us with really the ultimate flexibility, right? We got to meet every kiddo where they're at, and how can we provide these services? So when we were thinking of what does this look like specifically to kindergarten, right? So Mr. Shaw, if you want to kind of click to the next slide for us. How could we structure our kindergarten classrooms next year to do something different that provides a different level of support, right? Because I think it's fair to say, I think we're doing some really, really good things, but we definitely have some kiddos who are struggling. We have some staff who are struggling to support some kiddos who do have more complex needs. So kind of with Emily and our teams and our groups, we have we are looking to pilot something next year in our buildings that's definitely different. Because right now, if you look at, we just left Custer delivering this presentation to the staff there. We have 5 kindergarten classrooms at Custer, right? Each of those 5 classrooms is challenging. And they have 2 or 3 kiddos in each of those classrooms that have challenging needs, that we have a general education teacher who, you know, they're not equipped. Like, when our gen ed teachers go to school, they are not trained to be special education teachers. They likely take 1 course on behavior management in their undergrad, probably sophomore year. And then we put them in the field and we say, best of luck to you, right? And I think that's a bigger conversation on our teacher prep program and improvements that need to happen there. But then all 5 of those classrooms, right, we are trying to support with staff from both the ISD and the local district, Monroe Public, pushing into those classrooms, but our support's not consistent, right? Because there's 5 different classrooms there, 5 different classrooms that have needs and have the same level of need, but they can only get our social worker 2 hours this day, right? Because then the next day, that next classroom also has that same level of need. So our support is very spread out right now, which is kind of leading to some of our classrooms being just more challenging than they have to be. So why not, similar to our early childhood idea that we were kind of discussing and really centering that support, it's really kind of taking those ideas and starting when our kiddos are the youngest, and then doing a similar model when our kiddos come into kindergarten to offer a true actual co-teaching model in our kindergarten classroom, where these kiddos that we're talking about, they're already in our buildings, right? So we're not talking about kiddos who are at our educational center at the ISD campus. Like, there's always going to be a need for that continuum, and those kiddos will need that level of support. But these are the kiddos that they're already in our buildings. They're just spread across multiple different classrooms and having a challenge in multiple different classrooms, and the support we provide when it's there, it's great. We're able to regulate these kiddos, get them in class, get them engaged. That support then has to fade away because there's other classrooms And then that challenge then kind of perpetuates as a cycle that we don't want to continue to have to do. So in a true co-teaching model, we're looking at taking one of our special education teachers that we have, and we'll have to, you know, recruitment's always going to be a thing for special education, right? That's a challenge across the nation, hard to fill positions, absolutely. But pairing up our general education staff that's already doing this work, and for the most part, they're doing this work by themselves, right? They're in the classroom with these students with the knowledge and skills that they have as a gen ed teacher, and pairing them up with a special education teacher who has the expertise in behavioral interventions, who has the expertise in training in academic interventions, and giving that gen ed teacher that partner pair for the duration of the day, right, to provide that support to those kiddos. Because what we're doing right now is these kids are in these rooms, and that support comes and goes on a rotating basis that sometimes isn't consistent because classroom B might need all the help this week, and then that leaves classroom A with nothing, essentially. So really structuring and really being tight with our support in this classroom. So when we're looking at our five elementaries program in one of our resource rooms, which is a program we already run within the district, to give each one of our elementaries one of those classrooms that really structures that support on a solid basis. When we're talking about having kiddos, gen ed kiddos, our students with disabilities that are, again, already in our classrooms, in this room, with that all-day support of a special education teacher. And you also talk about, and there's definitely some things that we're still working through, but scheduling time. So we're going to take one of our ISD behavior coaches, which is a BCBA, essentially, and scheduling one of those staff members to be in that classroom on a rotating basis. So one day per week in each of our five classrooms to, again, give that team of teachers who are working hard to support our learners that behavior support and that expertise on a structured, scheduled basis, which is something that we definitely don't do. Those are like on an as-needed basis that essentially come in as like a crisis prevention, and that is all reactive work, right? Nothing we're doing right now is very proactive, and we need to shift our method to be proactive with our youngest learners to provide that level of support.
So if we have Emily, she's going to take and walk you through, for example, we look at what you see, it's in on your paper there, it's up on the screen. So imagine, Custer, five elementaries, and we're looking at this young fives and kindergarten model for next year. And so if you want to just walk the board through what Custer Elementary could look like,
yeah,
right here.
So currently at Custer, there are some traditional classrooms that are with students, then there's not any IEPs yet. Right, either because they're in kindergarten or because of how we try to schedule and structure our resource room teachers so they're not spread out amongst all of the classrooms. And so that would still be intact at Custer, and we would have a couple of those classrooms. Moving up the continuum, you see the general education classroom, and that's many of the classrooms currently at Custer right now where there's a blend of students with or without IEPs, with or without 504 plans. They have that support of that resource room teacher that goes into the classroom, pushes in, supports those IEP goals for those students that have IEPs. Where we're proposing a different kind of change in the continuum is that co-taught that Andrew kind of already just talked through, but really that's the support with that special education teacher all day long in that kindergarten classroom. So if you look kind of down the column, there's some specific supports that we're building in to really make that a robust classroom with lots of support. And this really stems from what we've heard feedback teacher-wise. They're saying we need more support. We need staff that's trained to support these specific behaviors, to support these specific needs. I'm a general education teacher, someone will say, and I don't know a lot about autism, so I need someone to come and help me and teach me about that. And so that's where this column is really coming from. So talking about push-in speech therapy, push-in social work, OT, PT if needed, music and art therapy. So getting all of those services right in that space. And that's what we're really hearing teachers give us feedback on, is we need that support consistent and in that location. And then moving up, Andrew can talk more about this too with the local-based part of the continuum.
I guess I'm having a hard time conceptually understanding what's going on. Are you basically saying, in a nutshell, we'd like to categorize the same type of children in the same type of classroom?
No, no, no.
Nope.
Okay, no, then no, you've lost me.
Yeah.
You've
yep.
lost me.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Okay, so we'll.
I'd like to go back to the start.
We'll back it up right here. So envision this. When we look at a kindergarten classroom, how many students right now at Custer right now have an IEP?
Off the top of my head, I would say around 120.
No. How many? I'm sorry. In kindergarten.
Less than 30.
Okay. So we're thinking about 30 students with IEPs, all right, roughly.
And Andy, of those 30, 75% would be speech only.
Okay, there we go. That helps. So we're going to get that number down, which I kind of felt like it was sitting right around 8 students. Okay, now understand that 8 students could be anywhere from low level, okay, non-behavioral, to a little bit more needs. And so what we're looking at is traditional classroom, normal blend that you typically would see. But like what Andrew was sharing is that right now, all 5 classrooms, we would take all the students and we split them all out, right? And so then we're trying to, and we have students who have complex behaviors and complex needs. And so if you take and you put one complex need in every single classroom, and then you try to provide services at each of those classrooms in kindergarten, we're spread ourselves so thin, we can't do it. So what we're showing is that you take, for example, that co-taught classroom, we're looking at that third column, all right? So we're going to look at that one. We're going to look at that fourth column. We're going to say, all right, we have 8 students that have greater needs. Split that number in half. So they're going to have 4 in each classroom. And then the rest of the classroom is built off of what we already have from their traditional setting there. But what the difference is, though, in that setting is you have your co-taught, you have your special education teacher who's in that room servicing all day long because they understand what could be a trigger for a student with autism. And or what may be causing that behavioral issue. And that's why even the behavior specialist is in there one day a week. And so doing this push-in. Because the idea is that with proper interventions, some of our students will not need and or receive special education services later on. And some of these kids are that we see coming into kindergarten, Andrew mentioned, okay, there might be 8 right there. Speech and language is a growing number, but 8 students in the future, you know, that number can always fluctuate. But there's always students out there that do not have an IEP or do not have a 504 that sit on the range where things are going on. And so what we're trying to do is just create more of a specialty. It's not a segregation because that is not permitted.
No,
it's actually
right.
Focusing.
I mean, pardon my language. I understand that's a no-no. But let me see if I can rephrase this. We're trying to...
We're trying to categorize our students so that they have more homogeneous needs in one classroom. Is that correct?
So I would say that we were not looking to run like categorical type programs. Right?
No, we can't say that. I understand we can't say that.
Resource room is a
but
very...
But like I worded it, could we more homogeneous people in them?
Honestly, I would say that the kiddos that we support in our kindergarten, their needs are so different. Actually, that if you asked me to pull 5 kindergarten kiddos with an IEP that are very similar across the district, I would have a hard time doing that.
Yeah. Well, then what's the good of having a person in there if they can't help them?
Well, that's the thing. They can help them. Right?
Oh, so, I thought you said they're so general you don't know
how
to help
them.
No, I'm
saying that our kiddos are so – we have some kiddos that are so complex, and it comes with potentially like lifelong disabilities that they were born with that they will live with their entire life. And students who are impacted by their life and their family dynamics that have experienced, honestly, levels of trauma as a 5-year-old that are unimaginable as an adult that I'll never have to experience. And they've lived more of a life in 5 years than I hopefully ever have to live. And those needs are different, right, than a child with autism. However, our special ed providers and our BCBAs, they're trained in all of those realms, right? We can support kiddos with autism. We can support kiddos with challenging behaviors together. But right now, those kiddos are spread across 5 different classrooms. And the support we're trying to give is, you know, if Darla has a classroom and a child with complex needs, Darla, maybe I can help you on Monday, but I can't help you on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday because I'm going to be in Tom's classroom on those days. So if those kiddos, and we're not talking about 30 or 40 kiddos. It's a very small number within our buildings are together in a classroom. We're trying to provide that support so I can help you, Darla, Monday through Friday with my level of training and expertise so you don't have to struggle with those kiddos on a daily basis.
How does that look for the rest of the class?
Yep. And so that's why we show on here the level of supports that go into that classroom. Because what we always have to remember is our requirement is to educate all students that come to us. And that's, I think, where we listen to parents talk about what's going about how is my child being protected? What's my having my child? Mm-hmm. I think what we also lose is that we have opportunities actually to flip the mindset of it's actually opportunities to grow rather than having fear. And so when we look at that co-taught classroom, we're talking about a teacher, a general education teacher, who really understands what's going on and can build great relationships. At the same moment in time, your special education teacher. One example, we have a student right now, and this student was we made adjustments in what was going on and kind of put them in this model and recalibrate what's going on in their world. And in the last 4 weeks, and this was a student that would have been on the progression of heading towards special ed, heading towards local base, but because we made the appropriate adjustments that we could make because of what this flow looks like, in 4 weeks we've had zero escalations, and in the 4 weeks we've had, and because it's what the BCBAs do, they track it, doubled the student's time on task.
I'm not disagreeing with that. Yep. I just want to understand categorizing similar people in one class.
Yeah, so what you have is, go ahead here. What's going to happen, I'll help you guys with this. Because we're not going to finish this tonight. We're going to go for about 3 more minutes, and we're going to come back and continue, okay? Just so you know that this will be up for on our next one. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, we need more discussion.
Oh, you do? No.
So my first thought of this is it sounds like this is a done deal, and it sounds like this is the move that we are moving into with Monroe Public Schools. Am I correct?
We've been meeting with teachers and talking about it. We're asking.
Looks pretty well developed, and it sounds like it's very well developed.
So what we're asking of all of our teachers is it's a pilot, and two, what other things would they like to see and or struggles they could have here? What we want to get to, honestly, is this, and I'm going to just be real honest on this one, is first and foremost, the way we have been going, we've got to get in earlier to intervene. So that we can move students out of that path of potentially needing special education services. And it's, and so this has that opportunity to help us. But number two is this, and it's the biggest one that we face in this school district, is there is a belief that students that have have things that are going on in their world, and it could be a special education relation portion there, need to go somewhere else. And that's the problem, because our job is to educate all kids. So we have to figure out mechanisms to educate all kids. And that's where there's not, the term I've used in my whole career is, we can't send kids to Siberia. And that's what we have people that are challenging us, saying, we don't want these kids. And so what they're doing, I'm going to just, is this. They're drawing lines. We're going to get there. They draw lines in the sand. And so you have this line in the sand that says, I want it here. I want it here, and so they keep pushing it down. We've talked about that when we start to look at and really try to hone in that, well, they'll just figure out 10 more kids, or they'll figure out more kids, and because it's this belief. And what we're saying, first and foremost, all kids are general education students first that may need to receive special education services and may need to receive more services as they get older. And so now, though, what we've been struggling with is when you create destinations, people will try to manipulate the destination so to put kids in it. And that's not a good system. So what we're trying to do is just re-envision and flip it so that doesn't happen.
And I'm not sure, but using the example that using the example that we had before, if we had two classrooms in Custer with more intensive teaching, isn't that the two side barriers that we have in that school?
So, but what it comes is that, as you think about it, we already have people that want to have students that are here moved in straight into a local-based classroom that is all special ed. So we're actually trying to create a blend.
That are saying this. I just don't know who these people are saying this.
Huh? Please just trust me here.
Like I would second that.
I've done this in my career. This is the world
I'm gonna
with teachers.
Take my
okay, yeah.
And I'm just going to let you know that I live in the same society you live in, and I have had children, and I've been in the education system as well as everybody else here has had kids in the education system. And for a very long time, those separative classrooms have been going out the window for a very long time. And so I think that the system itself has done very good at acknowledging that there are more needs, and then there are needs that we want the children to be all together. I did not see a failure on that within the system. I didn't. If you told me about five other failures I thought the system had, I may agree with you, but I didn't believe that that was one of them. So I don't know where this big cheerleading is in Monroe to want students removed. I think they want everybody to have an opportunity to learn, and that's at everybody with every learning capacity, whether you have are able to learn at a higher level or your level varies along the continuum. We want everybody to learn in the same capacity. And so I'm very confused, and this, you know, to me, plays along with what we talked about before is when we moved into a behavioral education system. And this is a continuum of that process that we discussed that when we were in the, last point when we talked about this.
Because we've got to get out of this meeting so we can have a couple of minutes.
May I please just have one minute, Mary. I've been waiting so patiently.
You have been.
So I feel that the system that's being presented is more of a testament to how many supports our students need, and that we should really consider shrinking class sizes, increasing the number of adults that are in the classroom, so increasing, well, decreasing the ratio of students to adults, no matter what those students' abilities are. So if we're not going to be concentrating the number of IEP 504 students into particular classrooms, I feel like we should really be investing in providing co-taught classrooms across the board, instead of in particular scenarios. So I feel like that would be a good investment.
That was yeah. 1.5 minutes.
Yep. So we're going to come back with a, and we'll walk you guys through the whole thing. Okay. We will add, though, we did lower all class sizes in the K-3 world, and the idea of this is in all buildings, too. So, all right. Thank you, everybody.
Can I get a motion for adjournment?
Thanks.
Support? Show of hands. This meeting is adjourned. We'll start our next one at 7:01.
I always chuckle over the show of hands.